Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm going to start the talk this evening about Hurricane Harvey. It's a currently active tropical cyclone that recently made landfall in Texas. It's considered a Category 4 hurricane. It's the first major hurricane to make landfall in the United States since a hurricane named Wilma came in 2005. By August 26th, more than 20 inches of rain had fallen in Corpus Christi in the metropolitan area. There have been wind gusts up to 140 miles an hour with Hurricane Harvey. Some sustained winds up to 110 miles per hour. That'd be unbelievable for sustained winds. At one point, there were 300,000 people without power. More than 24 inches of rain fell in Houston in 24 hours. If you watch some of the drone footage, you'll get a feel for how bad the damage really is. There are many areas where the water is as high as 12 foot deep, and walls of water are moving inland from storm surges. Currently, there's about $40 billion worth of damage, they're saying. The amount of rainfall with Hurricane Harvey exceeds Katrina by quite some level. In Contact Report 136, line 185, it says that the whole Earth is going to become a flood plain area. And the Meyer information will tell you that this is caused by overpopulation. Well, what is the link with overpopulation? Overpopulation leads to deforestation, for one thing. And that deforestation is the clearing of the Earth's forests on a massive scale, which results in damage to the quality of the land and destroys habitat for many animals. But what's worse about it is our forests have a real purpose on the planet. And one of the great purposes of the forest is to moderate the weather. How do they do that? Well, forests promote warmth, particularly in the wintertime, because the forests have what's called low albedo. And that means the forest doesn't reflect back a lot of the solar radiation. It pulls the solar radiation, pulls it in and it holds it in the forest, and then it takes that hot air, which moves around the forest, and it kind of cools it because of shade. So again, it's moderating the weather. You've got a couple different actions going on. Another thing that forests do is they prevent erosion, and they help moderate floods. If you have giant forests, you can bring in a lot of water, and the trees will just suck it all up. The plants will suck it all in. But when you wipe out your forests, you lose this natural these naturally occurring operations like shade, like a low albedo. They absorb that warmth. Another interesting thing that forests do, which doesn't prevent floods, but maybe in some way it does, the forests the rough, you know, edge of the forest, when the wind blows over it, it causes turbulence. And in that sense, it can cause rainfall. That turbulence blowing over, research indicates that forests promote rain because of the turbulence that is created by the rough surface area of the tops of the trees. So what happens is the rains will move to other areas and blow over the deforested area. So in other words, one thing that could happen, and this is a little bit of speculation on my part, is that the forests tend to cause the smaller rains to occur on a regular basis, where when you don't have the forest, these giant storms manifest, and then they dump like 24 inches of rain, like what's going on with Hurricane Harvey. We have many problems going on in the earth. We're going to see huge natural catastrophes that will become ever worse and worse because of overpopulation, because overpopulation destroys the forests. The forests moderate the weather. We're going to see ever more severe droughts, periods of cold weather, vast storms, rainstorms, firestorms, forest fires. These are the catastrophes that are going to occur in the third millennium. We're in the third millennium right now. Contact Report 215 says enormous firestorms and gigantic hurricanes will sweep over the USA and bring devastation, destruction, and annihilation, as from time immemorial has never happened before. And that's what we're seeing now, these tremendous, gigantic hurricanes. And I've documented the gigantic fires that we've had. Let me run over those really quickly because I haven't talked about those in a while. August 20th, 2016 was the San Bernardino fire, where 58 square miles were burned, 80,000 people evacuated, 105 homes destroyed. 2016, from May 3rd to July 5th, was the Fort McMurray wildfire. The fire spread across 1,500,000 acres. And this was in Canada. Probably the most gigantic fire I know of. July 10th, 2016, the Cold Springs fire caused the evacuation of one of my fellow radio show hosts, Solaris Blue Raven. July 4th, 2016, the Carlton Complex fire burned 390 square miles, an area four times the size of Seattle, 256,000 acres. And I won't go back any farther, but 2014, gigantic fires, 2013, and on and on and on. That'll give you a rough view of the natural disasters that are coming. There's also a lot of problems with our leadership. Our leadership is self-aggrandizing. It's megalomania gone wild with many of our leaders. Megalomania is a psychopathological condition characterized by delusions, fantasies of wealth, power, and omnipotence. The Meyer material called Bush megalomaniacal. Our leaders are self-aggrandizing. They exaggerate their own importance. Another really bad thing that's happening to the people of the earth is they're becoming emotionless, disinterested, indolent, and obtuse. Obtuse meaning slow to learn. Indolent meaning they don't even have the will to learn anymore. They're lazy. So we're seeing the simple human relationships being destroyed and entire families ruined. We see the great conflict between the left and the right worsening in the United States. We see an over-focus on money and profit. Obtuse. Obtuse means annoyingly insensitive and slow to understand. And that's the way people are today. Not able to think clearly. Not able to understand what is obvious or simple. We're seeing people being indolent, wanting to avoid activity. And that's against one of the most important creational natural laws, which is the law of striving. We should always be striving. People are disinterested. They have a lack of trust. The left and the right don't trust each other anymore. There's a barbarity that's coming into our population. And people are becoming ever more uneducated. We have a tremendous problem with overpopulation. As I've said before many times, 9,000 newborns per hour, 4 million people starve to death and die on the streets of India, 18 million people starve to death every year in the world, 10 million children die every year from starvation or starvation-related diseases. The world population grows by about 77 million people annually. It's just staggering what is going on. Every time you see forested areas being stripped and buildings being built, you should feel a sense of dread, because that's leading to the destruction of the world that we live in. I thought I'd take a little bit of time this evening to talk about reincarnation. And what that means. See, we all have an innermost personality, the innermost creational I. This innermost personality is your innermost creational nature. And we have the ability to distinguish the impulses and the values that are related to our innermost nature. We have guiding impulses that radiate from our innermost nature. Remember, the spirit form comes into the body of the child at 21 days of age, after the sperm fertilizes the egg. The spirit form is a fragment of the universal consciousness. The universal consciousness is the intelligence that's driving the expansion of our universe and the evolution of everything in our universe. In fact, human spirit forms are created for the purpose of helping the universal consciousness to evolve. Now, your purpose, my purpose, our purpose is the evolution of our consciousness, and that we eventually bring back that experience and that knowledge to the universal consciousness after we go through all of these many, many millions, even billions of years of evolution. It starts out in physical bodies, and we reincarnate in the physical bodies for about 40 to 60 million years. Now, when the spirit form comes in, it brings with it the consciousness. And we all have a consciousness. We have a subconscious, an unconscious, and a conscious mind. The subconsciousness is what interacts with reality first. Like if you put your hand on a hot stove and you pull your hand back, that was your subconscious. That was your unconscious. The unconscious mind interacts with reality first. So if you put your hand on a hot stove, you're not even aware of it, and you pulled your hand back. That's the way nature protects you. So the unconscious mind works extremely quickly. Now, just below the unconscious is the subconscious. The subconscious is where the difficult problems are worked out. So if your unconscious mind is evaluating information and it decides that it's complicated or very deep, it'll pass that information on to the subconscious. Now the subconscious will mull that information over. The conscious mind is the final stage in many ways, because you know the conscious mind gets information that comes to it from, like, this secretary. The unconscious mind is kind of a secretary. Now, in your subconscious mind are the programmed essences of your evolution. What I mean by that is what you've learned from about love and about wisdom and about reasonableness and humility and all of these kinds of important virtues. These values are stored and they're programmed into your subconscious. They come in when the spirit form leaves the spirit realm and it brings with it the new personality and the new consciousness. Programmed in that subconsciousness is the wisdom of your previous lifetime. So that's what will be impulsing you as well. So there are these signals, various kinds of signals are what the universal consciousness has given you. Now, the universal consciousness, though, is it's very neutral. That's why I a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, we talked about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald and that tragedy where this giant freighter in Lake Superior broke in half in this great storm and all these men died. So we get a lot of help, but the creation, as far as I know, doesn't override the laws of cause and effect. So when, for example, and this may not be the best example, but sometimes people have a kind of innate fear of heights, and that's probably for various reasons. It could be that you're getting impulse from your subconscious saying, hey, this is very dangerous what you're doing standing on this ledge. You may have fallen off a ledge in an earlier lifetime. So this is kind of the way that we're guided. Now, but we're not the creation. The universal consciousness is not a heavenly father. It doesn't rescue its children. We're pretty much responsible for ourselves. I mean, we have parents, and it's a very sad situation where children don't have good parents, or animals do not have proper parenting, or their owners don't take good care of them, and it really, I call the planet Earth sometimes the planet of unnecessary death, because we're so out of touch with these creational universal laws, particularly the law of love, and we're all guilty of violating this highest form of love called effective love. The law of love is the primary creational natural law. And in fact, the creation radiates love, although it won't rescue you. The creation radiates love, and love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Creation has an absolute logic to it. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. So these small animals, these plants, the forest, as I was talking about earlier, they all have a purpose. And it's all related to logic. You know, the highest principle in all creation, love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. So there's a logic between the existence of the hummingbird and the bee that take the nectar out of the flower and then pass that on. So all of these parts of nature have a role to play. Now, we're supposed to be the highest evolved creature. We have a consciousness. We can evolve our consciousness. And in order to do that, we have to live by certain creational natural laws. One of these is the law of love. And the law of love is the highest form of love. It's called effective love. It's a love that's based on reverence and respect. And you have an awe for creation. You're in awe for creation. You feel a sense of calm when you're in creation, when you're out in the forest. The other creational natural law is the law of striving. It's the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, you're not going to live. You're going to end up dying. This is, again, the harshness of creation. I saw a little hummingbird, seen him multiple times in the evenings or early first thing in the morning. He's always working. He's always out there earning his living. You know, flying from flower to flower to the plants in my garden. This is the law of striving. It's the fundamental law of all evolution. If you're not striving, you're not going to be a happy person. Now, the other law is the law of harmony. That means that there's a negative and positive to each, and that we should have a balance in our thinking. And this is why I've spent so much time reading and reading and rereading and rereading. I don't know, maybe this is my eighth time through now. I'm losing track as I continue to go through this book that's about really the law of harmony and how to maintain harmony within your thinking. And there are six or seven characteristics, probably seven, of what your thinking will be like when you have this harmony in your consciousness. You'll have confidence. You'll be confident. I'm confident. Should always be in present tense. I'm confident. I'm optimistic. I'm relaxed. I'm cheerful. I'm thankful. I'm enthusiastic. I'm in harmony. And this is a beautiful feeling when you're in harmony, and it relates perfectly with an enthusiasm. So that's one way to tell you've made it into harmony, is because you'll have enthusiasm. And if you find yourself lacking enthusiasm in your thinking, or if you're, you know, you're going to lack some enthusiasm if you're totally exhausted. But if you feel yourself lacking enthusiasm, that's a sign for you that you may have gone either too negative in your thinking or too positive. Anyway, the principle of the universe is the principle of life. And this principle is the law of evolution through cause and effect. Wow, we're talking about the law of striving, which is related to your evolution. The more you strive, the more you evolve. And I'm telling you, as you learn to be confident and to be optimistic and to be cheerful and to be relaxed and to be thankful and to be enthusiastic, the more you learn these things, you're going to do better and better and better at things that involve your mind and your thinking. It is the nature of thoughts that by their might alone, everything, every conceivable thing can be brought into fruition. So any problems that you need to solve in your life, as soon as you start to apply these principles to them, they are improving. You need to think in the present tense now. I am optimistic. I am confident. So the law of evolution through cause and effect, the law of causality, whereby every single effect, every single occurrence, and every single action and so forth has a preceding cause. So Hurricane Harvey has a cause. It's related to the overpopulation of Earth. It's related to deforestation. It's the destruction of the moderating action of our forests, among other things. There are other causes I probably haven't even discovered yet. Anyway, in accordance with this law, the human being, him or herself, creates fairness or unfairness. You know, you create the fairness or the unfairness in your life by means of your own thoughts. Creation, in contrast to that, knows only fairness. Think about that. Because it is completely neutral, positive, equalized. And therefore knows no feeling-based or other impulsations which could be other than of a neutral, positive, equalized kind. So this superintelligence is always in this neutral, positive thinking. Therefore, there is no revenge nor hate inherent in it. Rather, only love and harmony. There's only love and harmony in universal consciousness. There's something called the law of prosperity and abundance. Every life form, and therefore also the human being, has everything in plentiful abundance in order to live and evolve without having to live in want. Now, because we're violating certain other principles, like the law of love, we're not living under the law of love, we're not living under the law of striving or the law of harmony, we're not living under the laws related to overpopulation, because of that, the earth is what I call the planet of unnecessary death. And we short circuit these laws of nature. The human being is a free, what's called a Wesen in the German, Wesen, evolving itself according to its own will without any intervention from the creation. There's the kicker. That's why the creation doesn't intervene, because we have to make our own mistakes in order to learn from them. The human being can be obstinate. He can be completely ignorant about creation's laws. The human being can evolve at the rate he wants to. But the creation is a Wesenheiten. There's no free will from the creation in terms of its evolution. It evolves according to a predetermined plan. It's evolving continually. It never stops evolving. It's like a machine almost. It's like a juggernaut. For 155 trillion years, it expands. It's expanding right now. It's roughly elliptical shaped. It has 7 spherical layers that counter-rotate against one another. The 4th layer is the material belt. That's where the stars, the planets, the galaxies, the solar systems are. Positive energies come in from Earth space into the material belt. The negative energies from the transformation belt come into the material belt. And these two, the negative and the positive energies, come together. They form a secondary energy, which eventually becomes material. Now, this creational spirit energy, it's weaving through the entire universe, and it has an intelligence of its own. But it's not like the intelligence of a human being. Our intelligence is a different nature than the creation. We are sentient. We have awareness, subjectivity. We have the ability to experience and feel. We have a sense of self. The unconscious, as I was saying earlier, is the part of the psyche lying before the consciousness. Therefore, not easily raised into consciousness. It has a much faster rate of processing than the conscious mind. The unconscious is something like a clerical assistant. It comes before the consciousness in the chain of information processing. So there's a chain of information processing. So the unconscious autonomously takes in and sorts impulses, perceptions, facts. It's kind of a preprocessor. That means that through the unconscious, instantaneous perceptions are made in an imperceptible way to the human being. It goes, the deeper, the subconscious is much deeper than the unconscious. The unconscious, though, works with the deeper leveled subconscious. So what I've been talking about is the material consciousness, which is the actual personality of the human being. It's only our material consciousness that can be creative. Drawings, inventions, notes, books, and everything like that come from the material consciousness. It's where your decisions are made, all thought processes, all considerations, all deliberations. You have a psyche which controls the thoughts and feelings of the material consciousness. Remember, your spiritual consciousness is your innermost creational self. It has something called the gemut, which controls its thoughts and feelings. And there's a process which goes on in the spiritual consciousness called the empfinden. It's a purely spiritual process which takes place in the gemut. And it relates to what are called these swinging waves. Empfinden is this fine spiritual perception which allows you to understand and sense the radiating love of creation. So when we say Wesenheiten, we're talking about the creation or stones or water or gases. If we talk about a Wesen, we're talking about a human being, a cat or a dog. The higher animals are Wesen. And there is something called the swinging wave, the electromagnetic swinging wave, the electromagnetic swinging waves, which are these periodically built up electric and magnetic fields. And they're related to our spirit form. They're related to our spiritual consciousness. And eventually, we start to learn to use this swinging wave that has energies and forces of immense might, which allow us to do things like telekinesis and teleportation. So anyway, I started to talk about reincarnation and to talk about what the spirit form is and how it operates. Because our spirit form is in many ways the real you. Now, we have what's called a conscious or an unconscious purposefulness. And it's both the unconscious mind and the conscious mind that can bring thoughts to fruition. So this is the scary thing, is that your unconscious can bring things into fruition in your life that you really don't want. One of the things that we have to do is start to set what are called definite intentions, or the setting of a zeal. The zeal is the target. So you should have a conscious striving toward a zeal. Do not let your thoughts just drift. Let me read what the book here says about this. But for the human being, that means that he or she should control his thoughts in every phase, and indeed consciously, so that uncontrollable, unconscious, automatic thoughts do not become the driving might and do not fulfill unconscious intentions and the unconscious setting of ultimate destination points. Because if you let your unconscious do these things, that can bring you psychical harm, physical harm, material harm. Now, the problem is we allow our thought boats to drift unchecked on the ocean of conscious and unconscious intentions. So we should be setting zeal destination points, and we should be guiding our thoughts. So you should be evaluating your thoughts all the time so you can correct them. So if you have impure, negative, useless, or wrong thoughts, you can remove them. If you have purposelessness in your thoughts, a vice of senseless drifting can occur, which leads to no success. It can lead you to ill humor, moodiness, unfairness, egoism, and many other wrong and negative aspects. So you should not allow your consciousness to drift. Do not allow your thought boats to drift unchecked. So no human being should allow this drifting to take place. But unfortunately, it happens very often, because most people do not control their thoughts. So, good thoughts lead to good feelings. Good feelings lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. So you are the master of your own destiny. You can create good circumstances in your life. And this is critical, because as we advance in our evolution, our thoughts have more ability to become reality. So you have a thought, a wish. You should nurture this thought, create a conscious picture, apply enthusiasm to it, and that will become reality. So as you start to do this, you will notice, you'll find more things that you need to apply the power of your thoughts to. You know, because you're not drifting anymore. we start to drift less and less. And we focus our mental fluidal powers. Mental fluidal powers come out from the consciousness and the body, and they can settle in things in your home, in your furniture, in your walls. They can even settle in the trees that are in your yard. So we need to have peaceful, harmonious thoughts, not anger, because anger harms your organs. So we need to stay away from those kinds of things. Unfortunately, much of society is living in a kind of insanity. Remember, the universal consciousness is not a God, not a heavenly father. We have what's on the earth, a God delusion insanity, where the notion of God is an invention of the human being. And the Meyer information says it's a form of schizophrenic delusion that's part of our temporal lobes now and our parietal lobes. So religious experiences is a part of this schizophrenic delusion. And it this can be genetically inherited, this religious belief. And it's a schizophrenia, it's a mental disorder that's characterized by abnormal social behavior. Because people no longer recognize what is real. Common symptoms can be false belief, unclear, confused thinking. Schizophrenia does not imply always a split personality or a multiple personality disorder. Rather, what can happen is the splitting of mental functions. So you don't always have to have a split personality. But when your mental functions do not operate in a whole way, they start to split. That is also part of a mental disorder called schizophrenia. It's important to realize that God, as I've described it, is an invention. And a delusion is this idiosyncratic belief. In the Contact Report 10, which talk about the spiritual teaching a lot, it says that the human, the earth human, surrounds himself with pride, junk, a delusion. And this causes our spirit to become stunted. You see, one of the things you'll realize when you start to harness the power of thinking in your life is you'll depend on yourself, and it feels so good to be able to depend on yourself. Heredity and religion. Let's talk about heredity and religion. Certain hereditary diseases are passed down, as well as a religious insanity. And addictions can be passed on as well. What does Askit say about this? God delusion insanity. She says, for thousands of years, talking about the Giza intelligences, for thousands of years, they deceived the earth humans with religious miracles and visions of every kind in order to maintain and yet further increase the religious delusion. I was talking about the God delusion insanity. Out of the grounds, they also created a mighty station under the Pyramid of Giza in order to guide from there the religious delusional events on the earth. So that's what has been going on. You know, there are many names for God. And the ancient Egyptians had an era of what's called Atenism. Possibly the earliest kind of monotheistic religion was the deity called Aten, premised as on being the true supreme being and creator of the universe. And some scholars say that names like Adonai, which appears in Judaism, and Allah, which appears in Islam, descended from the Egyptian Aten. Amenhotep IV initially introduced Atenism about 1346-48 BC, raising that Aten to the status of supreme god. Aten, the god of Atenism, first appears in text in the 12th dynasty. Now, this is interesting because the Aten is the sun disk and was merely one aspect of the sun god Ra. All creation was thought to emanate from the god and to exist within the god. In particular, the god was not depicted in an anthropomorphic human form, but as rays of light extending from the sun's disk. This isn't, you know, there are some relation here to understanding the creation. Now, if you go to Judaism in the Bible, there is the Tetragrammaton, which is YHWH, is used as one of the names of God. The Meyer material states there is a universal consciousness, creation, but there is no religious deity. However, in ancient times, there were extraterrestrial human beings on the earth, and they called themselves kings of wisdom by the word JHWH, which is translated as God on the earth. The Ishwishes are talked about in Contact Report 5. Contact Report number 5 was a contact that occurred back in 1975, February 16th, between Semyase and Billy. Now, at this time, she was landing her ship sometimes in Switzerland still. And Billy would have these face-to-face conversations with her. Eventually, they had to be more secretive about it. But she had some amazing things to tell Billy. Let me continue here. I'll read a few of the things Semyase told Billy. He says, "You are right, because today I want to tell you something which will be of interest not only to you but to everyone. It is somewhat strange sounding story, but will raise a lot of dust through the interest of people because it sounds too fantastic. For all those who have not yet discovered or developed their spiritual consciousness-based thinking, intellectual ability is unfortunately not enough to be able to grasp the story. But human beings who are just intellectual is what you have a lot of on earth. And of people, and of all people, they're often the ones who lack spiritual consciousness-based knowledge because they can't develop an understanding of the real and logical. With these, there must also be mentioned those who are misled by religions and those who are neither advanced in intellect or spiritually conscious or spiritual consciousness. They all are the most evil opponents of the truth, of the real and the irrefutable creative logic. Their criticism and their denial of certain things portray them as human beings living in primitive stupidity. Earth humans, beings who always want to know everything better, but who in reality are as ignorant as the ape creatures that populate your jungles. By their contesting of facts and possibilities, they make their consciousness-related narrowness and their primitiveness evident." What a fantastic contact report this is. Contact Report 5. Take some time to read that one. I have to make a note to myself to go back to this one. Billy says, "Those are very harsh words, Semyase, even if they also correspond to my own view of the sad truth." Semyase says, "Exactly, and you know what this, that this is actually so. And that is really so. You give the proof yourself in your book, where you have expressed it in even harsher words." Billy says, naturally, because the truth can only be spoken in harsh words. Since diplomacy would be a pure lie and it would trivialize everything. Sure, you must only make sure that you can make it understandable to people. Among other things, they have already become too effeminate and fallen to unreality to be able to recognize true diplomacy as reality and to be able to digest it. They have become soft and atrophied in their thinking and acting and speaking. So they rebel against and resist everything that sounds like hard truth. But the truth can only be spread through harshness. Just like peace can only be enforced through sheer forcible nonviolence. You know, this is something I need to learn. I know, unfortunately, but you have said something about a story that you wanted to tell me today. What then is the story supposed to be? Does it have something to do with mankind, or is it just a trivial story? I will let you and all those to whom you forward the story decide about that. Billy says, so it should be a sort of history of mankind then, surely, Semyase says. Billy says, I can't wait to hear it then, because I have thought about it a lot during the course of my life. So Billy, or Semyase, is going to go into this history of what has gone on the earth. And this kind of thing is absolutely fascinating. I'm not sure that I'm going to read all this tonight. This is actually would be a very, very interesting thing to talk about. I'll just briefly read some of it. Semyase says, I know, and you have found out the truth, or the approximate truth in many things, naturally. We are also not aware of all the events and date in detail, but we are informed about them to a large extent. So hear the story then. The earthly chronology is not very accurate, and it is only halfway oriented towards the facts. Even your own reckonings don't exactly match, though they are the most accurate which has ever been calculated by a human being on the earth. The calculations vary only by the small amount of around 200 years. With the calculations of your scientists and researchers reveal gaps several thousands of years. A fact which you can recalculate at any time based on my data, which I will give you here. Many researchers on the Earth have been trying from time immemorial to work out the exact time of the flood known to you from the Bible without any success worth mentioning. According to current Christian chronology, the flood took place exactly 10,079 years ago. It was triggered by a global catastrophe of cosmic origin. A gigantic comet threw the Earth out of its orbit and changed its orbital period and direction of rotation. This is the Destroyer Comet. It's a fantastic story. At the time, a day on Earth amounted to more than 40 hours. So before the Destroyer Comet came through, our day lasted 40 hours, and the sun did not rise from the east as it does today. Such orbital period and rotation directions have stricken the Earth twice after the flood, but they have not brought such devastating disasters as the ones caused by that said flood. You know, this would be a great thing to go over in the show in the future. Let's do that. Contact Report 5. I'll make a note of that, and then we'll come back to that where we can put enough time into this to really understand it. So the Destroyer Comet changed our day, which was 40 hours in length, to a 24-hour day, and it reversed the rotation of the Earth. What an amazing thing. You know, the Meyer material is just so much. Well, I've only got 5 minutes left anyway. So much information. It's just tremendous. I want to thanks all of the folks that are listening to these archives. Man, there's just so many people coming to these archives. I hope you find the show valuable. I do. It's good. I learn every time I do a show, so I enjoy it too. Have a great evening. Hopefully I'll be back soon, and we can talk more about this amazing information that comes from the Meyer material. Have a great evening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Good night.